The House will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Berger Beyer, Beyer Bonamici, Bonamici Boone, Boone Boquist, Boquist Bruin, Buckley, Buck Burley, Butler, Butler Cameron, Cannon, Cannon Clem, Clem Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Flores Galizio, Galizio Garrard, Gelzer, Gelzer Gilliam, Gilliam Gilman, Gerard, Gerard Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Hunt Jensen, Jensen Comp, Kotek, Kotek Krieger, Crummel, Crummel Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Nolan Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Roblin Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Schaffler Scott, Scott Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Thatcher Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Cannon, Flores, Galizio, Gelzer, Gerard, Hunt, Jensen, Kotek, Crummel, Roblin, Schaffler, Scott, Thatcher, Witt, excused, Bruin, Greenlick, Minnis, Richardson, excused for business of the House, Barker, Cameron, Hannah, Krieger, Nathanson, Shields.
Members, when we recessed, we were under the order of business of third reading of Senate bills. Members, if I could please, House will come to order. Members, when we recessed, we were under the order of third reading of Senate bills, and the clerk will read the next bill. Representative David Edwards, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative David Edwards requests unanimous consent to temporarily return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'd appreciate if you direct your attention to the side aisle. One of my longtime interns, the lovely and talented Bree Davis, will be leaving me after today. She is a major in politics and government with minors in Spanish and peace and conflict studies at Pacific University in Forest Grove, Representative Riley's district. She will graduate
Members,
in 2 weeks.
It is extremely noisy in here, and someone has the floor. This will go a lot faster if we keep the noise level down and take your conversations outside if you must. And please sit at your desks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry, Representative Edwards, please go ahead.
To conclude, Ms. Davis is a senior airman in the Air Force Reserves, and she won her unit's Airman of the Quarter Award for the first quarter of 2007. Thank you for all your help, Bree, and good luck.
Further courtesies. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 237 relating to pesticides.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 237. Representative Patty Smith. Yes, Representative Patty Smith. Your microphone does not appear to be working. Let's see if we can get you to a neighboring. Yes, could you use the speaker's mic right behind you? How's that?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I like being speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you Senate Bill 237, the other PERS bill, pesticide use reporting system. An increase to the maximum permissible fee paid by pesticide manufacturers and distributors for annual registration of each pesticide formula or formulation. This bill passed the House Ag and Natural Resource Committee unanimously. Currently, Oregon registers approximately 10,300 pesticide products annually. In 1999, we created the Pesticide Use Reporting System, or PERS, and at that time, they increased the fee started it at $130 and allowed the ODA to use up to $10 of each fee to fund an analytical review needed to implement the program. PERS includes three major components. Pesticide product registration emphasizes reviewing product labels to assure compliance with wording approved by the U.S. EPA. Pesticide user licensing assures the safety of the application of pesticides. All business and their employees that apply any pesticide product as a business activity to other person's property are required to be licensed in Oregon. Compliance monitoring investigates who the products are being sold by and to whom, how products are used, records kept of pesticide use and user licensing. In 2001, we raised the maximum registration fee to $160 and allowed $40 of each fee to be used to implement PERS as long as the legislature appropriated an equivalent amount of money to implement PERS from the general fund. Senate Bill 237 increases the maximum annual registration fee to $250 and allows ODA to use up to $40 of each fee to implement PERS through December 31, 2009, when it is scheduled to sunset. Currently, the cost of operating the pesticide program exceeds the revenues collected by ODA. A fee increase is necessary for the program to continue at its current service level. Colleagues, this is a good program for Oregon, and I urge your vote yes on Senate Bill 237.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
Just that it's a good bill, should pass.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Jensen, votes aye. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Representative Galizio, votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Representative Kremel, off the floor. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes no. Senate Bill 237, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 242, relating to school districts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 242A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 242A, we call Safe Routes to School. This bill would require school districts that plant in their planning of a major construction project and seeking public approval of a bond measure greater than $1 million to do the following things: evaluate the need for safety improvements within 1 mile of an elementary school and 1.5 miles of a secondary school, evaluate the potential for a joint funding with other public and private entities, consider including the costs of these improvements within the funding of the larger construction project, include in the public record the issues considered and the discussion made by the local school board. Under this legislation, the local school district determines both the process followed and ultimately whatever decision is made. There is a need for this legislation because of the following. In 2005, pedestrian accidents were the leading cause of accidental deaths among children 5 to 14 years of age. In Oregon, we do not normally provide transportation for students who live either a mile from an elementary school or 1.5 miles from a secondary school. I believe we have some responsibility to ensure that the safety of these children that walk or bike to school, and I would say we actually should be encouraging kids to walk or bike to school because of the health benefits of so doing. If we have new construction of a major renovation, this bill would require school districts to examine the routes children have to take to school and consider what improvements might be necessary to improve the safety of those routes. The decision on what improvements to be made would rest totally with the school district. Having worked on a board with the water board that I worked at, we found it very, very, very helpful when the state would let us know when they were going to do a major road construction project, because if we had at the same time a project that we could have done either this year or next year to put a new pipe in, much better to do it when they have torn up the road as opposed to doing it after the road has already been played and tear up the road and put this new road having improvements to it for a water line under it just after it was done. So we had a lot of cooperative projects that saved both money for the state and for our local water board. The same is true with this issue. Cities are doing work in their streets, and if they know at the same time that the school is providing a project that they could work together to maybe improve both projects, it would be an advantage to everyone. In the final analysis, this is a totally permissive bill that allows school districts to make the choice for themselves and to help their kids get to school safer. Great bill, should pass. Thank you for your attention.
Further discussion? Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And the carrier will allow a few questions.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I will.
Thank you very much. Is this mandatory or it is simply permissive according to this Senate Bill 242?
The mandatory part is that they will have a discussion about the issues that they decide that they need to talk about with regard to coming to and from school. So there is a requirement part that they will have to have a discussion about issues with respect to safety coming to and from school within a mile or a mile and a half radius of the school. So that part is required. The other part that is required is that they will have a public record of those issues that were discussed. But the actual discussion about what they're actually going to put in a bond issue, if they're going to do any of those improvements, is entirely up to them.
So follow up?
Additional questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
So good, Representative. It is confusing. And Section 19 says, a school district shall, to me, what I understand, it is mandatory. And also there is another shall at the line 18. That large construction project shall be part of the public record relating. So my question is, if this is not mandatory, they just can study and evaluate, and that's it then.
Yeah, it says they shall consider. It doesn't say they shall do anything about that, but they shall consider these issues. And in the other part of the shall, they shall put in the public record that they have these discussions about those public safety issues, but not with respect to what they have to do any of those things, but that they will have had the discussion and that they shall do a report in the public record that they discuss those issues.
Okay. One more question.
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you very much again. And the line 10 says evaluate the need for safety improvement within 1 mile of an elementary school or 1.5 miles of secondary school. Could you explain what does it mean? It is a 1 mile area of around 1.5 miles. Could you explain what that means?
Yes, I would be glad to do that. And thank you for the question. If you were to take a 1 mile piece of string and put it at the top of your school building or the new construction site and put that string all the way around, make a 1 mile radius around the school, that area is the area considered that all students who live within that mile need to walk to an elementary school. That's our public way of doing it. And what this bill is saying is that that is the area in which you need to consider things that would help make it safer to get to school. Example might be there's a portion of that area that have no sidewalks, and it makes it harder so the kids walk in the street instead of on the sidewalk because there wasn't a sidewalk. So they would be talking with the city about, why aren't you helping build sidewalks here? And when you do your next bond, would you please consider sidewalks? Or another one might be, it would be really good to have in this area near the school some road bumps, speed bumps that will slow traffic down as they're coming to and from the school, make a better opening for a driveway for the cars to come in and go out of a school building, especially in elementary if parents are coming to drop their kids off. All of those things within that mile radius should be at least considered and looked at so that when you're building plans for kids to walk to school, you can say the safest route for you to walk to school is this way and this way. So if I'm just remodeling a building, that would be one thing. And I would be saying to those people, here's the safest ways to get to school for parents or others to help with. And if it's not the safest, what kinds of improvements would help make it a safer one? Probably at the expense of the city, not to the school district.
Thank you very much. To the bill.
To the bill.
Can I use a visual aid? May I?
Yes. Representative Lim requests permission to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Seeing none, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I have a letter from the school district. As a matter of fact, I send an email to my school district and then I ask their opinion on this bill without my opinion, and I got the letter here. Here is the Superintendent Noah's comment on the bill. This would have a negative impact on a school district's ability to secure voters' approval of a bond measure. It would increase the school district responsibility for making transportation improvement that would significantly increase the cost of the individual project, unless the legislature is willing to support a mechanism to provide additional funding for capital improvement. So, out of this concern, that I will continue to oppose this bill, because when the bill is talking about the 1 mile, we do not know which is 1 mile. Board members of the school district say this is the safe route within the 1 mile, 1.5 mile area. Some others say this is the another area, 1 mile from this side, this is a safe area. Others could say within 1 mile is a large area. We do not know which is the route is the safe area. And this will cost this, according to the major summary here, it says no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. That's true, but this will be a fiscal impact and the local government, school district. I think currently school district is struggling the fundings of the educating our children, and when we are requiring more money for safety and others, which is a good thing, no question about it, but out of the funding concerns, I will continue to vote no, because this will create more problem for the local schools having the ability to educate our children. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. Would you help me understand how this would fit in, how it would dovetail with the Safe Routes to School program that we enacted in 2005?
From my, I have to go back and remember that bill. I'm not doing a good job with that. I wish I'd had a little bit of warning on this one. Refresh me on the other bill, and then I can probably answer that question, if you could do that for me.
Clarification?
Okay. Clarification, please.
Okay. Then may I instead speak to the measure and just ask him perhaps in his closing comments to pick up on this? Would that be fair?
to the bill.
Thank you. To the bill. Colleagues, in 2005, when I was on Transportation Committee, we worked very hard. We enacted a Safe Routes to Schools program for the state of Oregon. At the same time, coincidentally, the federal government, when they reauthorized the transportation bill in Congress, they also set up a Safe Routes to School program that was giving grant dollars to the states. We received those grant dollars. I'm not sure exactly how much it is. I think it's to the tune of $1 million, maybe $2 million a year from the federal government. Excuse me. Each community is going to implement the Safe Routes to Schools differently. In my case, in the city of Bend, we have an organization whose sole purpose and sole existence is to develop alternative means of commuting, whether it's for students or people going to work or whatever the case may be. We have a park district that is very, very, very involved in developing and maintaining urban trails. And we have a school district that is very concerned about safe routes to schools. My concern with this bill is that it may compromise ongoing efforts right now. This focuses on school by school by school, basically, or project by project, when instead the way that Safe Route Schools, at least in my area, and I would suspect this is probably the case elsewhere, is working, is they take a bigger picture look. I know that our park district looks at the entire urban area and says, how can we develop an urban trail system in conjunction with safe routes to schools by taking that into consideration? So though the purpose behind this is very noble and understandable, colleagues, I would urge a no vote on this because I'm very concerned that it would actually get in the way of the Safe Routes to Schools program that we've already enacted. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this bill gives me a lot of pause. You're talking about within a mile from a school district. If you go to my district, my house district 58, And with the exception of two cities in my district, or two communities in my district, it would include every other town or every other school district is within a mile circular radius of the local school. And having walked those streets now for the last 10, 12 years, I can assure you that there are a lot of sidewalk construction and so forth that would make it, much better. But I can also assure you that these little communities, complements of other actions that have been taken in the state of Oregon, which we're not debating right now, but other activities that have taken place, simply are not in a financial position to rebuild all of their sidewalks and all of their streets. Colleagues, and I know the carrier comes from what he would call a rural area, and I haven't spent a lot of time in that community, but I will assure you that in most of the communities in at least rural eastern Oregon, this would present something of a significant financial hardship. Now, I know they may be permissive. They may not have to do this, okay? I understand that. But when we, in our infinite wisdom, here in this building, put something into statute, even though we perceive it to be permissive, that's not necessarily going to be perceived that way by all of the folks out there. I'd ask you to think about this a little bit before you hastily reach for your green button and push the red button. It would be a good vote for Eastern Oregon.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I supported this in committee, but I did bring up in committee, I was concerned about if you were doing remodels and how that would affect. And since I voted for it, I've received input from my superintendents asking me to not support this bill, so I will not be supporting the bill.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, it's a very simple bill. It's getting kind of blown out of shape here. This bill, what it does, if a school district is planning on a large construction project of greater than $1 million, this is the only time this comes into play, a large construction project over $1 million, and they're going to go out for a bond, all this bill is asking them to do, before submitting the bond to the voters, to consider how kids are going to get to school within the area that the school is legally obligated to transport them. Outside of 1 mile, the school sends a bus. Inside of 1 mile, the school doesn't send a bus. So all it's saying is, if you're going to do a big remodel, we're going to do a large remodel in Ashland with the school bond we passed. If this bill is in effect, this would say, Ashland School District, you're doing a remodel. As part of, before you submit that bond measure to the voters, just consider how the kids are going to get to school and back home within a mile of the school, because they're not going to take a school bus. They're going to be walking or biking. It's a very simple bill. It has nothing to do with forcing any school district to spend any dollar at any time that does not want to, and its voters do not want to. So I really urge a aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I really appreciate debate on this bill. I just wanted to add one other viewpoint, and that is this is a type of bill that many folks have been following in the state for many years, because we're trying to deal with the fact that our children aren't active enough physically. And as we've heard in other bills, there is an obesity problem here in the state for our kids. This would allow some consideration of providing easier ways, safer ways for students to walk, which would increase their physical activity, which is one of the things that, in addition to nutrition, other things is really important. So I just want to add that to the debate and hope you'll consider that and vote aye on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I too voted for this in committee, and listening to the debate today has been rather interesting. A couple of notes that I had written to myself on the bill is, number one, is envisioning our school districts having to hire traffic engineers to take a look at traffic and all of those sorts of things in terms of the schools, not just in the immediate area of the school, though, but within that one-mile radius. Another concern that I have about it is whether it will, what kind of an impact it will have on the negotiating positions of the schools when they're negotiating with local governments, when they're in terms of their placement of the school and their talking with the local government in terms of the transportation to and from. The bill may not really be needed, but and the only unintended consequence that I'm concerned about with this is whether or not it will drive up the cost. It may, but then again, it may not. I think I'm going to go ahead and support the bill. I know I'm standing here talking maybe against it, but I think I am going to go ahead and support it. One reason is because I supported it in committee. But I think that, and the idea is certainly noble, and I couldn't agree more with the previous speaker about, you know, one of the things I think our parents need to do, or parents need to do, is kick their kids in the butts out the door so that they walk to school, be outside more, be more active. I think one of the concerns that parents have, of course, in sending their kids to school is the safety of the child getting there, in terms of auto traffic, maybe even bicycle traffic, I don't know, and of course the idea of somebody approaching their child when they're on their way to school, which is of course always an issue, and it doesn't matter what the transportation modes are in that respect. But I think that the notion that you know, when the schools are negotiating with the local government about the placement and land use and all of those sorts of things, one of the things that does come into play are the systems development charges that the school will probably pay, the radius around the school that the local government already will say. For example, if they're doing a large remodeling project, maybe the local government will say, well, within 150 feet, you have to put in new sidewalks, or you have to widen the road, or there's a variety of other things that they may be conditioned that they have to do. What I want to make sure of, though, is that the local government doesn't then say, gee, you know, the law says that you have to evaluate it and look at it within a mile, so now we're going to make you stretch that sidewalk. Instead of 150 feet, we're going to make you stretch that sidewalk a mile, or we're going to make you add a bicycle lane or widen the road, you know, all of those sorts of things that are really quite a ways away. I agree, though, that I agree with the basic premise of the bill of evaluating within a mile what the safety aspects are of the children being able to get to school. And that's what's tipping me kind of over the edge of supporting the bill. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. I'm just looking at the bill a little closer, evaluating it, if you will, and in lines 10 and 14, it uses the word twice, evaluate the need for safety improvements, and on line 14, evaluate the potential for joint funding. Now, I've heard it talked about today that this merely means discussing or talking about it. What to you is meant by evaluating? Because it almost seems like maybe a study could possibly be interpreted from the language here.
From my understanding and talking to the people who wrote this bill, and their understanding is that to evaluate means to look at and have a discussion about alternatives that might be to make it safer or not safer. So I'm evaluating what's available, what we could do, what couldn't happen, what would be the best option, or so on. It is a discussion about this issue, not a study group.
Okay, thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I appreciate that, because I think a lot of people could be like the good representative from District 58, Land of the Loaves and Fishes, was saying sometimes bills can be interpreted a lot differently outside of this building than they are in here. And I'm glad to hear that evaluate does merely mean discussing. And I'm glad that's on the record. Just for the record, throwing it out there, the City of St. Paul was trying to get a crosswalk for many years across Highway 219 right in front of the high school, trying to get safer routes to school because it was highly necessary. And then just this past November, they passed the district passed a bond levy, and they are going to be doing some major renovation. And in so doing, they will coordinate both of those projects without any such bill. But, I guess it makes sense as long as we're not having to require the school districts to go through a big song and dance and study, spend more money doing a study or evaluation, to the nth degree rather than just merely discussing. So I think I'll be supporting it. Thanks.
See no one else in the queue who has not already spoken. Representative Jensen, I will call on you for a second time.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I simply had to respond to my good friend from Ashland, the good representative from Ashland, talking about major construction projects. Think about it. What kind of a project can you do for $1 million? Not much. Not much. That's just kind of routine maintenance, as those on Ways and Means have observed as we've traveled around the area. The folks, very seriously, this is not a good bill. The ideas are fine, and I don't quarrel with that. And I don't quarrel with liking and wanting to make our world safe for our children, or in my case, my children's children. But this is going to be something of a financial hardship, because a lot of these communities are going to have pressure put on them because of bills like this to do things that they literally can't afford to do. Do you really want to take that money away from the other activities that those communities could be using to serve their children, to provide for some summer activities, okay, for their children? I think not. Please reconsider this. I appreciate very much. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing no one else who has not already spoken, Representative Lim, you are called on for a second time.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, again. Some of the point I was going to say, Representative from District 58, that the loaves and fishes, and I do appreciate that. There's almost any school project it is more than $1 million. This bill is look like an insult to injury. We have many school districts that try to raise money through a bond, but they were not able to pass the bond because of the double majority. And then we are requiring of this that evaluate and study and consider before any bond measure out to the people. School district has to do this first, and this will cost more money and more delay. When they put out the bonding, they try to campaign to the people to make sure they have the majority of the people coming out and majority of the people vote for it. And on top of that, they need to all kinds of a study for the safety. No one is arguing against the safety, but this has went too far. So that point I like to bring it up. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
I do. First, I'd like to say to the good representative from Bend and the safe
routes to schools bill that we passed in the last session, now that I am out of the fog of my allergies. This will dovetail with that bill precisely, in the sense that we do have some communities that have taken that on and are working at it and have the grants. All this does is say, when you're thinking about a particular building in a particular site and you have a bond issue for $1 million, you should certainly get together with those people who have already been considering it and say, while we're doing this at the same time, is there other things that we can add that the city wants to help with, we can consider when we're doing it. It will not have an adverse effect, in my opinion, with respect to that one. In fact, I think it should be very, very complementary to that one. We have had a number of accidents in and around our schools, and we have two buildings, one in the Coos Bay District that's right on Highway 101, and it has been truly a difficult situation getting kids to and from that school safely where it's built, where the road came. The school was actually there for a long time. They've done some retooling of the road, and it got closer. There's almost no parking, and it's an elementary school that has been difficult. We try to bus almost all the kids, having them walk across that street where there aren't any stop lights makes it very, very difficult. We've been fortunate there without having a number of accidents. In Florence, we had a young person who was killed walking to school, again, going over 101, and they've been trying to get a stoplight there for many, many years. They've talked about it in the planning. It hasn't worked. It is difficult on these major streets, major highways, to get stoplights put in. But the conversation continues to take place. All this bill does, and truly if you read it carefully and look at it, you will recognize there is no requirement other than make sure you have a public meeting where you discuss it and have discussions about the safety of getting kids to and from school. Most school districts consider that when they're doing it. I think this just implies that they will work with their local cities to make sure that if the city's doing improvements, the discussions have taken place so that they can actually do that. I look forward to a time when more and more of our kids are taking advantage of that 1 mile walk. I would hope some of them would do it a little farther. I know that many of us sitting here, including myself, had to walk many, many more miles in the snow to get to school. But what we're asking here is just to make it as safe as it possibly can be for our kids to get in that 1 mile radius where we are not required to pick them up and deliver them to school, that the discussion about doing that safely is one that is held when construction is going on. Hopefully it's held all the time. So thank you. I urge an aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Gelster, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 242A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 301, relating to trustee notice of sale.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 301A. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And honorable colleagues, not kids, steadies me. I bring you today Senate Bill 301 from your Judiciary Committee with unanimous vote. Senate Bill 301 will resolve a current problem in having a property's occupant personally served under Oregon's trust deed nonjudicial foreclosure law. Trust deeds are a type of mortgage. ORS 86.705 to 86.795 provide creditors a four-month procedure to foreclose their security interest by a power of sale foreclosure without court involvement. The service provision in the Act requires personal service of the foreclosure notice on an occupant of the property being foreclosed. Serving an occupant and identifying whether the person served is an occupant has become increasingly difficult and very expensive. Some delays result from persons intentionally evading service, the property being used for drug activity or illegal purposes, with locked gates, aggressive dogs, no cougars, or other tactics used to stop the process servers. The property is illegitimately occupied by persons whose presence makes knowingly where the property is legitimately occupied almost impossible. Also, the property may be a vacation home and left unoccupied for long periods of time. SB 301 would solve this problem by amending ORS 86750 to allow a notice to be posted on the property as an alternative to personal service on an occupant. The process server would be required to attempt service three times, posting the notice on the first and second attempt and mailing the notice after the third unsuccessful attempt at service. It is fair to occupants because they would find the property posted with a notice of sale up to three times if the process server came to the property when they were not home. It also given that the notice is mailed to occupants, too, so they still have a notice. As amended, Oregon's non-judiciary trust deed foreclosure status would be more protective of occupants' rights than the statutes of neighboring states like Washington, California, and Nevada, which require only a single posting of foreclosure notice and do not require personal services upon the occupants. Colleagues, this is a landmark bill for the state of Oregon.
Members, the noise level is rising again. Can you please keep the noise down? And if you must talk, take your conversations outside. And if you could sit at your desks, that will help as well. Excuse me, Representative Wisner, please go ahead.
Because this is a landmark bill for the state of Oregon. As I commented in committee, ladies and gentlemen, this bill is modeled after Idaho, a bill in Idaho. And I hope this body will do that more in the future. Colleagues, it's a good bill. Please pass.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnant, do you wish to close?
Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Merkley votes aye. Senate Bill 301A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 545, relating to persons regulated by the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 545A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 545A comes to you from your Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously. It is the result of deliberation by the Oregon Funeral Directors Association and the Oregon Mortuary Cemetery Board and Mount Hood Community College's Funeral Service Education Director. The bill relaxes statutory timelines for experienced funeral practitioners and embalmers from other states seeking licensure by modifying the current requirement from being licensed for 2 years immediately prior to applying for an Oregon license to being licensed and in good standing in another state for 3 of the 5 years immediately preceding the application date. It also modifies the apprenticeship requirements to an aggregate total of no more than 48 months versus 48 consecutive months of training.
Apprentice funeral service practitioners and apprentice embalmers work under the supervision of licensed practitioners and embalmers for a period of at least 12 months before being eligible to apply for licensure and can concurrently serve both apprenticeships. Apprentices are currently required to complete their apprenticeship within 2 years of their license exam and may serve as an apprentice for a consecutive 48 months. Senate Bill 545A deletes this time restriction, allowing service as an apprentice for an aggregate time frame of 4 years. The measure also allows the Mortuary and Cemetery Board to include time lost by interruptions caused by a funeral service practitioner's apprentice's active duty in the military during war or a national emergency, and by interruptions that the board finds are excusable under its rules. Senate Bill 545A also helps mortuary students find a required internship by allowing licensed funeral service practitioners and embalmers to supervise up to 3 interns at a time, but only 1 apprentice at a time. It also remedies a rare circumstance that can arise when an Oregon funeral service practitioner licensee obtained their license before the current requirement of obtaining an associate degree prior to the license exam, let their license lapse, or chose to practice in another state and decide to return to an active license status. An associate degree is required for active practitioner licensees, but this can be bypassed for an out-of-state licensee who applies for an Oregon license, provided they have 4 years of experience. This bill extends this exemption to inactive Oregon licensees. The Mortuary and Cemetery Board has voted to support this bill, and there is no known organized opposition. It passed unanimously out of committee.
Further discussion? Representative Shields.
No known org. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I'll be voting no on this bill. Cox and Cox Funeral Home in my district feels this bill is unfair because it affords a lessening of license requirements to big out-of-state funeral corporations, while not affording these lessened standards to the small guys struggling in our own state. And again, I'll be voting no on this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Lim.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In Carrier, the Woods, allow me a question.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I believe that the embalmers and the funeral service practitioners, I believe this is one of the most important jobs in the world because they are taking care of the bodies, and we need to treat with all the respect. But why the page 2, 15 and 16, why do they eliminate this sentence shall be completed not more than 2 years before and after? Why do they eliminate that language? Because they need some kind of degree to handle this very important the bodies.
Well, what we have now is currently the out-of-state, an out-of-state practitioner coming into the state, they don't need an associate's degree. They do need 4 years of experience, and this bill would change the length of time that they needed to have a license prior to entering the state of Oregon and applying for license here from 2 consecutive years to 3 out of 5 years. And so they would still have to have significant experience, 4 years of experience, and 3 years of licensure. It's just changing the window of time that the state of Oregon would count that licensure coming from another state. Does that answer your...
I think that would be satisfactory. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out a couple things. There's a shortage of the folks that do this in this state, and that's not a good thing to have a shortage of. And I just want to point out the Oregon Funeral Directors Association approves of this, and there was a constituent, an Oregonian, who wanted a provision written into this bill to give them a license. Well, that's not how we do this. This is a statewide policy. It's going to address the shortage concerns, and it is definitely good for Oregon. It's a good bill to drive out. Thanks, Bob.
Further discussion? Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 545A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 559, relating to workers' compensation guarantee contracts.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 559A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 559A comes from the Business and Labor Committee, unanimous do pass recommendation after passing out of the Senate unanimously. In 1965, when I was a mere baby, the legislature established guarantee contract as the means for employers and their insurance to provide proof of workers' compensation coverage to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Guarantee contracts are a second contract that is filed after a workers' compensation insurance policy has been issued. Over time, the requirement for a guarantee contract is evolved into a system that is costly, does not reflect the underlying insurance policy, creates confusion regarding coverage and liability, and can delay benefits to injured workers. Furthermore, the guarantee contract system is unique to Oregon and creates a challenge for multi-state insurance. Senate Bill 559A eliminates the guarantee contract filing system and allows insurers to report insurance policy-based information to DCBS to satisfy the statutory proof of coverage requirement. In other words, the requirement remains, it will be a different system. The bill also changes the focus of coverage reporting and regulatory actions to link directly with the insurance policy, which is the same as many other lines of insurance, and how other states regulate proof of coverage requirements. There is no new or additional requirement imposed upon the employers. The statutory changes are focused on administrative responsibilities of the workers' compensation insurers and DCBS. Senate Bill 559A has the support of MLAC, as well as the workers' compensation insurers who are involved in developing this bill. It is a good regulatory streamlining bill. I urge its passage.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative from West Salem. And I, honest to goodness, just got this question from a constituent this afternoon before we came on the floor and wanted me to ask this question of you, so I shall. His concern with this, and he actually went through quite a litany of discussion and came to the conclusion it's a bad bill, but his concern is the bill's purpose is to open a door for private insurers, presumably the leading competitor, to compete with SAFE for workers' compensation contracting. And he goes on and on. So can you give some discussion to that?
Good representative, we had no discussion about competition in the committee. Discussion about none of that was brought. That kind of thing about competition between SAFE or some other insurer was brought forth in the discussions. The discussion was mostly around the fact that we are the only state that has this system, and multi-state insurers, which SAFE is not, are quite. It is a problem, and there is general agreement that by going to a system that makes more sense for today's insurance rules helps streamline government. That was the discussion.
Thank you.
Further, Representative Flores, you still have the floor? Or
thank you, Madam Speaker. I said thank you. No, I'm done.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Berger, did you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 559A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 579, relating to Oregon Growth Account.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 579. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, may I defer to my co-carrier first?
Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't intend to talk long today because I have the honor of co-carrying this bill with the representative from West Salem, who was, as they say, present at the creation. But I did want to underscore quickly how excited I am about this approach and the potential for the state. Some of you know that I went to the University of Washington for graduate school, and I appreciate the fact that most of you don't hold that against me. But there are some lessons to be learned from our neighbor to the north. And among those, I think, are the tremendous impact that a top research institution can have on the economy. I talked yesterday to the UW's Office of Technology Transfer and was reminded of the literally hundreds of patents and newly formed companies that have resulted from the research at the university. I'm sure all of us have confidence in the research going on in our universities in Oregon, and this bill is important because it will make it easier for the state to help bring those ideas to commercialization. By allowing the state to invest in those early stage firms, we can help the next budding entrepreneur and the next great Oregon company. Friends, this is one of the reasons I ran for the legislature. I'm convinced that government and business can be good partners. I'm excited about what this and the other bills in the Oregon Inc. package can do for the state. I want to salute the work of the Oregon Inc. group and the good representative from West Salem. With that, I'll urge your aye vote and turn it over to my co-carrier. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker and colleagues. A brief history. This is about the Oregon Growth Account, which was created by the 1995 Legislative Assembly within the Educational Endowment Fund, which we now call the Educational Stability Fund. This is government as we know it. Okay, this fund, the Educational Stability Fund, receives 18% of net lottery proceeds. The Oregon Growth Account, or OGA, then receives 10% of those funds, and this little fund is specifically designed to provide seed capital for emerging growth businesses in traded sector industries. It's university research seed capital, if I could describe it that way. Senate Bill 579 is part of the Oregon Innovation Council's legislative package. Now, I describe the Oregon Innovation Council as the way I spent my interim. This group of basically venture capitalists, high-level entrepreneurs, smart business folks spent the interim coming up with a package of bills to basically put Oregon, position Oregon for the next great ideas, make sure that our universities, our entrepreneurs, and the state are all on the same page as to what the next good ideas are. And the council's mission was to foster innovation-based business development, and a vital component of that mission is to promote the growth of new and emerging businesses in key industries in Oregon. In part, part of that mission is to increase the availability of seed and early-stage capital. Senate Bill 579 is intended, and it's part of this Oregon Innovation Council package, to expand the Oregon Growth Account investments in terms of the partnerships it enters into and the point along the commercialization, must be late, Madam Speaker, continuum at which the investments are made. While the OGA board has already made investments in early stage seed capital fund, this bill would give it flexibility to take a little more flexibility. To accomplish this, the bill expands the use of funds beyond existing traded sector industries, allowing an earlier stage seed investment in technology, processes, and products that may not yet be considered for the traded sector. But that, we hope, one day will. The OGA board does not receive proposals from businesses directly, but develops investment directives and strategies and selects and monitors external partners who manage the investments. To date, the OGA has made commitments of approximately $60 million, including nearly $30 million that has actually been invested. My friends, this is a small part of the Oregon Innovation Council efforts. It is putting a little money in the right place at the right time to grow commercialization of really good new ideas. I urge your support.
Further discussion? Representative Reed, do you wish to close? Or Representative Berger? I guess not.
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Morgan, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Votes aye. Senate Bill 579, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 747, relating to racing.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 747A. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 747A takes advantage of utilizing unclaimed cash vouchers that are issued at Portland Meadows and off-track betting sites in Oregon to finance education and benevolence programs provided by nonprofit organizations affiliated with the horse racing industry. A cash voucher is a receipt which shows a fixed amount of money that can be cashed in for money or for placing a pari-mutuel wager. While Portland Meadows maintains an account which tracks unclaimed cash vouchers, the vouchers' funds sit in the account and accumulate. Under the measure, licensees who conduct live horse racing are to maintain a cash vouchers account which tracks outstanding cash vouchers that have not been presented for payment or for a wager. Cash vouchers are declared void after 180 days after the close of the live race meet where the voucher was purchased, and funds from the unclaimed vouchers can be accessed 210 days after the close of the live race meet. 70% of the funds are to be dispersed to the Horsemen's Association having the greatest number of members entering horses in the licensee's race meets during the 180-day period, 18% of the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, and 12% to the Oregon Quarter Horse Racing Association. The types of programs that benefit from Senate Bill 747 include vision and dental care for eligible association members who cannot obtain coverage from either their employer or other means, and benevolent assistance for cases of extreme hardship. During the committee hearing, proponents testified that the total of unclaimed cash vouchers is currently around $200,000 and an estimate of between $18,000 to $20,000 per racing season. It is also important to note that county fairs who conduct horse racing are not affected by the bill, as they do not use a cash voucher type of wagering system. There was no opposition, and it passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee. Good bill. Urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll be brief. Colleagues, this is a good bill.
But I'd also like to bring your attention a little bit, since the topic of horse racing came up, that this industry is really fighting to survive, and the reason is because of the lotteries. We have become their major competition. So I encourage anything that would help horse racing. I think it's a nice venture, and it's been something that my family has enjoyed attending for a long, long time. And I think that it was a very big mistake to remove horse racing from the state fair. Even though that has nothing to do with this bill, I just wanted to throw that in. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. Senate Bill 747A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 748, relating to authorization to practice public accountancy.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 748A. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 748A is about certified public accountants. And I believe everybody's asked their questions already to the good representative from Southeastern Oregon. This bill just allows certified public accountants or public accounting firms licensed out of state to prepare, advise, or assist in preparation of tax returns without authorization by the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Basically, colleagues, accountants to prepare a tax return for somebody in Oregon, they have to be licensed in Oregon, and that just isn't practical for today's world. We have accountants to prepare tax returns for folks in other states, and they don't have to get licensed in those other states. And Oregon is one of the only two states that has this kind of requirement for accountants in other states. So I'm sure other folks would agree this bill is pretty practical. It's a good bill for CPAs, as far as I know. And I urge an aye vote on this bill. It had no known opposition. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Butler.
The bill, can you imagine that?
I'm sorry?
Can you imagine that to the bill, if I may?
And then
I'll declare conflict in just a moment. Thank you very much, Representative, for carrying this piece of legislation. This overcomes a problem which we've been experiencing not just from state to state but also internationally. Because of the global economy in which we live, it's interesting to see someone bring in a tax return and find that they have W-2s from multiple states, and actually in that process we're finding that in the global economy people are becoming much more mobile, and we're finding that they'll work in multiple states and multiple locations. Oregon is just one of a number of states that got caught up in this a few years ago, and actually California probably brought it to a head when they said, we're not going to accept any Oregon prepared tax returns. You cannot prepare a California return unless you'll come and register with California, and you can't prepare that return for a fee, and you could see where this was going. This became a border war, and in a world economy when your competition anywhere in the world is never more than an eighth of a second away from you, you got to get current with what's going on. So I have appreciated the discussions that have gone on around the fact that Oregon, which has a unique system of tax preparation, including certified public accountants as well as enrolled agents and licensed tax preparers and licensed tax consultants, we're the only state in the nation that has the latter two, has come to the conclusion that we need to open up our economy to accountants that have California licenses and Idaho licenses, because they are working reciprocally with us to do the same thing. That being said, number one, I would encourage your yes vote on Senate Bill 748. And number two, Madam Speaker, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
Thank you. I am a certified public accountant, hold a license, but this talks about active certified public accountants. I don't know how active I am. Thank you.
Representative Butler declares a potential conflict of interest. It shall be noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Just a one item, I think, that just to make people rest assured. You know, CPAs basically all must pass a certifying test that's basically the same across the country. And so doing away with this licensing and registration requirement that really is hampering out-of-state CPAs really is not going to decrease the level of consumer protection in the state of Oregon. So, again, I would urge your i-vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion, I'm sorry, Representative Holvey, were you done?
Yes.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Representative Tomei votes aye. All members have voted. Senate Bill 748A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 946 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on the Monday, May 14th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, today I rise in a pretty disappointed attitude. Of course, to quote, make a quote from what favorite movie? Attitude reflects leadership. I came here to represent the priorities of the people from District 19 that elected me to come here. And I understand in doing so that I must work with other people in this building and listen to their priorities, understand what's important to them, and work through those issues to come to some consensus that's best for the people of the state of Oregon. But this must be a two-way street. Other people need to listen. Other people need to hear my opinions. Thank you, Representative, for listening. I'm sad to say that this is not the case today. Recently, I and some other members of this body were thrown a bone. I'll call it a ham bone. No meat on it. $1 million worth of chips to be used in $250,000 increments, to be placed on priorities in a sub Ways and Means Committee on Public Safety where we felt they should be. But yesterday, I voted no on a corrections budget that was cut by $12 million in community corrections. And here in Marion County, we take the brunt of that cut. And because I made that vote, and nobody asked my opinion, I was forced to vote on it, my ham bones were taken away. Today I'm broke. Why have I put in 100 hours listening to the priorities of the state of Oregon in public safety? Colleagues, where are we today? Last session, we had $12.393 billion identified that we were going to spend. I leave you with one question today. How much is it today that we are going to spend in this building? And I will continue to vote no on budgets until we identify exactly how much we agree to spend. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. On May 2, 2007, an OSP trooper responded to a reported crash on Interstate 5 near Grants Pass. Upon arrival, the trooper found a pickup that had crashed onto the shoulder of Interstate 5. The driver was subsequently arrested, handcuffed, and placed into the rear of the trooper's patrol car. As part of the investigation, the trooper returned to the crash pickup and found three firearms inside, one of which was a shotgun that was reported stolen. While searching the pickup, the trooper was unaware that the man had kicked out the rear passenger window and escaped into the darkness. Another OSP trooper and a Josephine County Sheriff's Office deputy with a canine was dispatched to the area to help search for the man. After approximately 15 minutes, the man came back to the scene from where he was hiding. Josephine County, along with many other counties in Oregon, face a clear and present danger as their ability to place law enforcement on the roads of their respective counties into the future is in peril. When will the state come to terms with this new reality? When will Oregon face the fact that law enforcement equals safety, equals business, equals tax revenue? Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A quick political note and then a personal one. Just on the political side, when we pass the state police budget, we're going to boost the troopers' level, and that will go into effect on July 1st. We could vote on it today, vote on it tomorrow. It's still going to go into effect on July 1st, just so people can remember that. On a personal note, though, since the Speaker announced it was my birthday today and Representative Garrard's birthday today, there's some rumors kind of going around that actually that we're twins and we were separated at birth. And I can understand a little bit of confusion on that score. The way I was told was that I had been stolen by a band of Irish gypsies and sold to a family who had distant relations to the Kennedys. And Representative Garrard was brought up by a private public partnership piloted by the Klamath Falls Chamber of Commerce, in which no prevailing wage jobs were paid there. But that actually isn't true. We actually are not separate at birth. But I do have to say, on the occasion of my 50th birthday, I just want to say that 25 years ago, if somebody had told me, when you're 50, you're going to be staying on the floor of the Oregon House of Representatives, I would have said, hey, let me have a little bit of what you're smoking there, because I just wouldn't have believed it. But my folks used to always tell me, you're known by the company that you keep. And on the occasion of my birthday, I just want to say I'm extremely proud to be turning 50 in the company of the members of the Oregon House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley, for sharing your 50th birthday with us. Further remonstrances, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just express some regrets that some of you apparently didn't get up to the fourth floor. As it was heard on the fourth floor by some, the Three Stooges were having birthdays. Now, I think Representative Esquivel, is that right, was one of those, and I think Representative Garrard was another. But memory doesn't come to me now as to who the third one of the Three Stooges was. But at any rate, you missed a pretty good show, I think. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Friday. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Esquivel.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Esquivel, Garrard, Jensen.
Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Friday, May 11th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move we adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, May 11th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, May 11th, 2007. The House is adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, May 11th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.